Tonight's a little different from all the other lessons we preached this week in that it's a lesson of encouragement from the standpoint of somebody who met the Apostle Paul and became what I call a refreshing friend. Emily said, I've got a picture of our cats I can put up here on that beginning screen that's better than that one. I said, well, why didn't you do that? She says, too late now. But I saw that picture on the internet and I thought, that's about as close a friendship as you can get. And certainly if we all had that kind of feeling toward one another, that would be a good thing. But let's look at the lesson and begin with me in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, where Paul said, the Lord grant mercy to the house of, how do you pronounce that? Onesiphorus is how you pronounce that. I'd always said Onesiphorus or something like that, and then I got to looking at the Greek and I thought, well, obviously it's spelled a certain way and there are diacritical marks in the Greek language, and the E at the beginning of the word is the eta, so it's pronounced like an A, not like an E, and the emphasis mark is on the third syllable, so I thought, well, all these years I've mispronounced it. It's actually Onesiphorus, but I'm sure Paul knew who he was. Of course, probably, you know, they say in any language you can take a proper name and pronounce it any way you want to, so maybe they called it George back then, I don't know. But Paul knew who he was, he knew how to pronounce his name, and he said, the Lord grant mercy. Notice mercy to the house of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chain, but when he arrived in Rome, he sought me out very zealously and found me. Now, I'm sure if you read that, you just kind of pass over it and not think much of it. But this whole lesson is based on this concept and the words that Paul speaks here. And we can apply it to ourselves. The name Onesiphorus means one who is a prophet bearer. And certainly he's well named because he was a great prophet to the Apostle Paul. He was his close friend, his refreshing friend. And let me ask you as we go through our lesson tonight, stop and think for a moment, who is your best friend? Who is somebody that when you're down and out and need a little bit of encouragement from, you know you can call that person. And they're going to say the kind of things you need to hear and build you up in kind of a way that makes you feel good again. It may be a best friend, it may be a friend that only occasionally is close to you, but somebody that you can really relate to and that can really help you out. Well, that's who Onesiphorus was. He was a person that Paul said, he refreshed me. Stop and think how important that statement is. First of all, isn't this the Apostle Paul? Isn't he the one that in zeal and in ability did more than any other single apostle in the New Testament? Isn't this the fellow who wrote half of the New Testament book? Isn't this the one that was so zealous that before he became a believer, he went to distant cities to persecute Christians and bring them back men and women and have them bound and killed? Isn't this the fellow who said, in zeal I exceed those of my own country? Why does a great man, a powerful man, an influential man like that need refreshing? And the answer is because he's a human being too. He has feelings. He has emotions. And he needs help. And here's one of the lessons we can think about. I don't care who you know that you think is a pillar in the Lord's church today. Somebody that you look at as a stalwart who never is going to sway one way or the other. But did you ever stop to think that that man too needs a word of encouragement? That person, man or woman, needs somebody once in a while to say, I appreciate what you're doing. Paul's in prison. God has revealed to him that this is his last stop. He's about to be executed by Nero. And he's not going to get out. He's come to the end of his career. And this is a zealous man who spent and did everything he could for the cause of Christ, and yet now he knows, as he sits in that cold prison cell, that he's going to look back over all that he's done, and I promise you he felt as he sat there, I haven't done enough. And even if he has believed that he's done enough, it's kind of hard to look at the end of your career and say, my career is over. And then to think how unjustly he's going to be tried and executed by a crazy Caesar like Nero. Life just isn't fair, is it? And I don't think Paul was having a pity party in prison. But when he wrote these words of inspiration, he didn't ask that God grant money or that God would grant wisdom. He wanted God to grant to Onesiphorus and his household what they had given him: mercy, love, appreciation, kindness. Because it said, he often refreshed me. This was not untypical for this man. And yet we so very often don't realize how much Paul as a human being needed refreshing. Why did he? Well, because he was in prison facing death, as we've already said. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6, he said, the time of my departure is at hand. Winter was coming on, and he encouraged Timothy, come to me quickly before winter. So Paul's like me, we're not fans of winter. Demas had forsaken him, having loved this present world. And that had to really hurt, because Demas before had been a brother and a fellow companion and a fellow laborer in the kingdom. And now Paul sits there grieving over a brother who at the very end of Paul's life lost his own faith. Paul said, at my first defense, no one stood with me. How depressing would that be? They all forsook him and fled, just like the disciples did for Jesus when he was arrested and put on trial. Even Timothy, his son in the faith, he had to admonish in 2 Timothy chapter 1, do not be afraid to come to me, for God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. You see, we all believe as Christians that we would like to feel like if somebody walked in tonight and said, all Christians are under arrest, and we're going to take you to prison and try you unjustly and then execute you, that we would all say, okay, I go first. But you never really know for sure how you're going to react until that time comes. And Paul very sadly says in these tones, at my first defense, nobody stood with me. And so he needed a little comfort and assurance. All those of Asia had also turned against him. And I can't think of a darker moment in a human being's life than Paul right now. So it shouldn't be surprising that any of us or all of us see that he needs that comfort. Well, what did Onesiphorus do for him? Well, again, as I've already said, he often refreshed Paul, he said. So this was his character. Much like Barnabas, who was the son of encouragement, Onesiphorus was the refreshing friend. He ministered to Paul in Ephesus as well, as it says here in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18. The Lord grant to him that he may find mercy from the Lord in that day. And you know very well how many ways he ministered to me in Ephesus. So this same young man imitated Jesus Christ, because Jesus wants to comfort us. He wants to be our refreshing friend as well. He says to all those who are worn out by sin, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. You see, Jesus Christ is that kind of friend to us if we will let him be. And he did what later Onesiphorus learned to do. The word rest means to repose or to refresh, to comfort. The English dictionary says that the word means to invigorate, to give new strength to. And the thesaurus says the words are reinvigorate, revitalize, revive, restore, perk up, stimulate, freshen, energize. And so Jesus says, come unto me and I will refresh you. I will give you rest. And so he did and he does. Jesus' work is something that we will all need to do throughout our entire lives. We need to be reinvigorated from time to time, because as Jesus said on one occasion, John chapter 4, I'm refreshing by giving the Spirit to you, who shall well up in you like rivers of living water. John chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. Imagine how encouraging that is. Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 2, which is quoted in Luke chapter 1 and verse 79, says that Jesus Christ would come to shine as a light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. Psalm 126 and verse 5 says, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Isaiah 12 and verse 3 says, therefore with joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation. Luke chapter 2 and verse 10, at the announcement of the birth of Jesus, the angel said to them, do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you glad tidings of great joy, which will be to all men. And so you see, Jesus has always been the one who came to cheer and to lift up and to help and to encourage, or in our lesson tonight, to be a refreshing friend. Wise is the man or the woman who chooses to spend some of his life or her life doing what Jesus did. Are you a refreshing friend to someone else? We all can be. We all should be. We don't all want to walk around and be a dark cloud that everybody runs away from when they see us coming. We would like to be somebody that when they see us coming say, oh, there's my friend. I always feel better when I'm around him or her. And that's how Onesiphorus was to Paul. Well, not only was he what Jesus was, it is something that we all need to be because it is so badly needed. Some of you young people may not have chosen your life's work. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? I hope that whatever you choose to be, that somehow it will incorporate making this world a better place, and you're being a servant and a refreshing friend to whoever you are, wherever you are. Maybe a kindergarten teacher who gets children off on the right track. Maybe somebody who has a job that pays well, and that yet you can use that wealth to help those who are down and out. But whatever you choose, don't be some kind of a person who works only for themselves. Choose with the idea of serving others, and in serving others, you make this world a better place to be. If you choose a career that only involves selfish pursuits, what's in it for me? What can I get out of it? What's the most I can do? Sometimes we even think ourselves, well, I want this career where I can retire early at 40 or 45 because then I can spend the rest of my life just laying back and taking it easy. And yet as Christians, we need to realize that that's not what we're here for. Nobody needs a man who's going to be a gambler, a bootlegger, a drug lord, or some other job that would be nothing more than a human parasite. Can't you imagine being a saloon owner and you're owning a liquor store? Would you want that to be your life's work? So that every time somebody died in a drunken stupor or died of cirrhosis of the liver or got in a car and went out and killed a family of innocent people, that you could take credit for that and say, that fellow left my establishment. Nobody would want to have that job. And yet think how many people do exactly that. How do they justify themselves? How do they look themselves in the mirror and say, well, it's okay to do this because they're going to buy it from somebody. They might as well buy it from me. Not me. I don't want to have that on my conscience. And I don't think anybody here does tonight either. That's a purely selfish, self-serving career. In contrast to that, find a career that no matter where you are or what you do, in some way, you're making this world a better place. In some way, you're a refreshing friend to those around you. You can even be a refreshing employee to your employer. And so look at it that way, because Onesiphorus certainly must have thought about that somehow. How did he become this person? Was he born that way? I kind of doubt it. He probably learned to be that kind of person. We don't know a lot about him personally other than what Paul says about him. Maybe he started out in a life that was down and out, and when he got on his own and said, I can do better, I'm going to worry about other people more than myself. I don't know what life he led that made him the kind of person that he was, but I know it's a great thing to be. And so again, we say that Paul himself served others. Look at Acts chapter 27 and verse 25. The Apostle Paul had this, or Luke said this about the Apostle Paul. that Paul on one occasion said, "Therefore take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me." What was Paul talking about when he said that? He's on a ship that's about to be shipwrecked, and everybody has given up hope for living. They think this ship is going to be wrecked out in the Mediterranean, and everybody's going to die. And they're even talking about killing the prisoners like Paul so they won't escape. And they're thinking that when this thing crashes, only the strong will be able to survive. The weak are going to drown in the ocean. And they've gone days and days without food because of the terrible storm they're in. And yet here's the little apostle Paul, who is a prisoner of a Roman soldier, and he's telling all of these men before they do these dastardly deeds, "Don't worry, everything's okay. I prayed to God, and he said not one soul would lose their life." Doesn't sound like much unless you're the only sound voice in the midst of terrible fear. And so Paul helped others. Giant that he was in the faith, he was not above making such a statement to those who needed it. Of all the important inspired words that Paul wrote, he didn't forget to write and say, "Onesiphorus often refreshed me." And so in 1 Thessalonians 5:11, he says, "Therefore comfort each other and edify one another, just as you also are doing." That's what is so beautiful about the Lord's church. If I'm discouraged, you can encourage me. If you're discouraged, I can encourage you. Generally, not all of us are going to be discouraged at the same time. And so we take turns back and forth encouraging those who are down, helping those who are weak when we are strong, or being helped when we are weak and they are strong. The church is a hospital to help us get through this life. It is an outpost. It is a fort out on the hostile world. And we come here for comfort and security. This is one of the few places in the world that we can come here and say, "I love God. I want to study His Word. I'm not ashamed to be a Christian. I'm glad to see my brothers and sisters in Christ. They really feel like brothers and sisters to me." And so that's what we're here for. If Paul needed this kind of encouragement, how much do all of us? Think how many times over your life you've been discouraged or disheartened or baffled or defeated. Very often in our lives we find there's more room for tears than there is for laughter. And so we need a refreshing friend. I remember reading about Abraham Lincoln when he was president, when the country was torn asunder by the Civil War. And very often during his time in office, they said that he would be found telling jokes and laughing. And they thought with all the Civil War going on and those thousands and thousands of young men being maimed or killed, that it was rather disrespectful for Abraham Lincoln to be telling jokes and laughing while he was president of the United States. And so finally somebody criticized him and said, "Mr. President, how can you laugh at a time like this?" And he said, "If I did not find the room to laugh once in a while," he said, "my heart would fully break." He had the burden of a country on his shoulders. And so we as brethren have the world's eternal souls on our shoulders. You can't carry that burden all the time. It's not ironic that gospel preachers, when they get together, spend most of their time either laughing or crying, and usually doing a little bit of both. If you want to see, I told you the other night that as a child I would sit in my father's house over in a corner quiet by myself and listen to these preachers tell jokes and sometimes tell terrible stories of how they had been mistreated or how others had done different things to them. And so on one hand they had a tear in their eye because it grieved them the way they were mistreated, but then the very next second they were telling the funniest joke you've ever heard and they're all laughing with tears running down their cheek and I'm laughing with them. And I'm looking at these men saying, you know, they just don't seem that way when they're in the pulpit. But you saw that laughter along with the sorrow because they carried the burden of their brethren on their shoulders as well. You and I need that. We need to laugh once in a while. We need to be happy. I was so glad to hear everybody come in tonight and laugh and carry on. It tells me that things are going well here, that you love one another and that you enjoy telling jokes and encouraging and laughing with one another. A church has real problems when the last amen said, everybody goes out the door like a scalded cat. When brethren are happy and doing well, the church is at ease, then everybody's at comfort with one another, and they're doing the very thing we're talking about tonight. You know, a lot of this comforting comes without planning. Sometimes we do that for others, and we don't even know that we're doing it. I don't know that Onesiphorus realized how much Paul appreciated what he was doing. But I suppose if he ever read this letter, he found out. There's no one so great as the one who puts heart back into us, sends us back into the battle of life with renewed strength, who resurrects our faith and our hope and says, what you're doing matters. It really comes and counts for something. And so we can always do exactly what Paul said here, comfort one another and edify one another just as also you are doing. And it is something we can all learn to do by just taking a moment to think about others. How did Onesiphorus help Paul? Well, number one, here's a real hard thing to remember. He went to see him. He could have succeeded at a lot of other things, but he decided he would succeed at helping others who are down and out. It is foolish for us to say, well, I can do anything you can do. We can't all do everything. But this was a job that Onesiphorus said, I can do. I can't be the Apostle Paul. I can't write letters of inspiration. God didn't choose me. But I can be the guy who goes to Rome, hunts Paul up, which if you don't realize, it was a danger to his own life already. Paul had to tell Timothy, you do what Onesiphorus does. He hunted me up. Well, I was going to come see Paul, but I couldn't find where he was. No, this fellow found him. And it wasn't easy. And so he went to see him. It didn't require genius. It did take courage, but more than that, it took a caring heart. Onesiphorus did not know Rome. He had difficulty finding Paul because Paul says he sought me out very zealously, or the King James says he sought me out very diligently. He went to Rome and he said, I'm not leaving until I find Paul and I encourage him, even if it cost me my life. And Paul certainly must have appreciated that. Others may have given up, but he was refusing to give up. Secondly, he sympathized with Paul. Not that he told Paul, Paul, I sure am sorry for you, or anything like that, but he showed that he sympathized with Paul by being there, by taking that much time and effort to come find Paul. The real sympathy is always a refreshing spirit to those who need it. And he refreshed Paul, as we've already said tonight, by what he was. We could ask the question, why do mountains rise so high above the earth? Why are roses so beautifully red and smell so wonderful? Why does the songbird sing so wonderfully? And the answer to all those questions is because that's what they were made to be. Mountains are to soar high above the plains because God made them that way. And as we look at the azure blue and see the purple mountain's majesty, we stop and wonder at the beauty of God's creation. But nobody ever says, well, I wonder why mountains are so high. I know when I lived in Arkansas, we talk about the mountains of Arkansas, and if you ever tell somebody who's from Colorado about your beautiful mountains, and they say, you don't have mountains in Arkansas. You have hills. No, we have mountains. That's what I said. They said, have you ever been to Colorado? I said, no. Then you don't know what a mountain is. Okay, I went to Colorado, and they're right. We have hills in Arkansas. They have mountains in Colorado. You never say, well, I wish that bird would quit singing because beautiful songbirds. And I heard one this morning. Blue sky, sun shining after all that wind last night. Opened the door and got the newspaper. There's a bird singing in the tree. And I thought, how beautiful, especially in the dead of winter. That's what birds do. Why does Onesiphorus encourage other people? Because that's who he is. And you and I can be that kind of person too. And so he refreshed Paul just by being there. I'm sure the minute Paul saw his face, all of the wonderful memories of what Onesiphorus had done for him before came rushing back to his mind, and they must have embraced and hugged one another. He was infused with that spiritual summer in the midst of a dark, bleak winter. And may it be so with all of us. If we don't have more of that, then may we learn it. Emphasize the positive. Look on the good side. Give people the benefit of the doubt. Take the time to think about their needs and be like that. Jesus said in John 7:37, on the last day, that great day of the feast, he stood out and said, "If anyone thirsts, let him come unto me." Jesus wanted to refresh people if they would just come and take upon him. And so we can be the same way as well. Brethren, may God give you the heart and the desire and the thoughtfulness to be today's Onesiphorus. There's not a one of us here tonight who isn't already being that kind of person, or who, if they are not, could not become one if they so chose. It's something you'd intend to do. And there's so much suffering and pain and sorrow and worry and anxiety that if all of us here tonight decided, this next week I'm going to practice this one small deed per day, one person at a time, how much blessings, how much goodness, how much happiness would be spread by the cheer that you've given. And you know what? It doesn't cost much. Thoughtfulness, a few moments, and a little bit of caring. Call up somebody that you know is discouraged and say, "Don't worry, it's going to be okay. For me to live as Christ and to die as gain, so either way, it'll be all right." Maybe somebody's suffering, you don't know it, and you call them up and you find out. You can encourage them too. It's a wonderful thing to do. And you know, we think, well, that was just one person then. He was unique in all the different ways he lived his life. But if you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, Paul had a list of a lot of people that were just like that. In chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians, in verse 15, he says, "I urge you, brethren, you know the household of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have devoted themselves to what? To the ministry of the saints." Verse 17, "I am glad about the coming of Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus, for what was lacking on your part, they supplied, for they refreshed my spirit in yours. Therefore acknowledge such men." It's amazing that there's that spot in the Lord's church where we can be the pat on everyone's back if we choose to be these kind of people. And so Christians who were daily facing the threat of their lives being taken didn't take life for granted, didn't take discouragement as part of the job, but tried to do everything they could to overcome the discouragement of this world by encouraging one another. And listen to the beautiful words of the Hebrew writer when he says this, "God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown toward his name, in that you have ministered to the saints, and you do minister." Nobody likes a whiner, a complainer, a negative person. Negativity is draining. Somebody told me a while back, and I'm sure you've heard it as well, that it takes a lot more muscles to frown than it does to smile. So why don't we smile more? Positive love and positive encouragement builds up. And there is an energy that exudes from that kind of person. And if you have that energy, people will naturally be drawn to you. I remember as a high school person, I had friends of mine that would say, "Nobody's friendly with me." And I told them what my father told me. He said, "If you want to be friendly, if you want to have friends, be friendly to them." I've told this story about Emily when we moved to Yellville, Arkansas. She grew up in Tampa, Florida, big city down south. We moved to a little town in north central Arkansas called Yellville, very small town back in the woods, and it was probably a couple of decades behind Tampa. But as Emily drove to work every day, she said, "Everybody's doing something, and I don't know what it means." And I said, "What are they doing?" She said, "As they're driving down the road, they do this." She said, "What are they doing?" I said, "They're waving hello." She said, "Well, why don't they do this?" I said, "Because they're in the hills of Arkansas, they can't turn loose the steering wheel." If you've never been through Yellville, you don't know what I'm talking about. Colorado may have mountains, we have curves. But she was impressed with the fact that here they're driving down the road, and even on those sharp curves, she's like, "Hi, how you doing?" I said, they're just trying to be friendly. So she learned. Sittish looker that she was. She learned to go down the road, and when they did this, she did it back. And they weren't saying you're number one either. So we can all learn to be friendly is what I'm trying to say. So are you one who builds up or one who's always tearing down? There should never be a brother or sister in Christ who tears down another human being, much less one in the church. And I'm sad to say that that's not always the case. But it's also tenderheartedness on our part and yours when you can think how much a guy like Onesiphorus meant to a monster like Paul. Paul was a human being. He did have feelings. He knew how to care. And I hope life is never so hard or harsh on you that you become cynical, suspicious, uncaring, and unloving. If the world has treated you so bad that you feel like being that kind of a person, then you find your friend like Onesiphorus, and you let them build you back up. Satan may throw his darts at us, and he may stab us in the heart many times. But as long as we're a child of God, Jesus Christ is going to win the victory. And if we stay with him, we'll win the victory too. So God bless you for all of your good deeds that you've done toward me this week, toward Emily. You have been our refreshing friends as well. It won't go unnoticed. And we'll spend a lot of time draining that energy from your hearts to ours and thanking God for you. May you always be a congregation who's known for the truth, that you'll stand for what's right regardless of what men may say or do, that you want preached in this pulpit the whole counsel of God, but that in addition to those beautiful truths that people say of the Richmond Church of Christ, those are some of the most refreshing people I have ever been around. That's how Jesus was, and if we're his true disciples, that's how we'll be as well. Think about all those statements in the letters like Ephesians and Philippians and Colossians that talk about the qualities that we as Christians should have. Patience, long-suffering, kindness, merciful. That's how Jesus was. It doesn't mean that we're weak or that we're ignorant or that we're naive or that we're simplistic. It simply means that we have someone that we idolize who is such a wonderful being that in one hand he can create the vast universe, and on the other hand he can say, do not forbid the little children from coming unto me, for those little children are those who make up the kingdom of heaven. So be that kind of person. Find the power of faith that will build your life up and make you strong as a high tower, and yet always be so tender and so kind that you can pay attention to even the simplest people, the weakest people, the most humble people on the earth. That's who we are. Thank you for listening this week. And if you need to obey the gospel tonight, then this will be the time for you to come. Because you might be sitting there thinking, I never looked at Christianity quite like that. I never thought about Jesus Christ being a loving friend. But he died for you. And he would do it again gladly if your soul could be saved. Paul did all the wonderful things he did because he saw the need for soul salvation. You remember when he said, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved? He meant it. He said again, I could consider myself accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen in the flesh, except it doesn't work that way. Would you be willing to give your soul for somebody you love to take their place in hell if they could be saved in heaven? Paul said, I could almost wish that. And that shows you how loving Christ and his followers really are. Be that kind of person by obeying Jesus Christ. The life of a true disciple begins with humility. Oh Lord, I know it's not in me to direct my own steps. It's not in me who walks to know how to go. And so you come to the Lord, you give him your heart. You bring Christ your broken lives. And he says, I will give you rest. And when he heals your heart, saves your soul, makes your life worth living again, and gives you the opportunity to live for something bigger than yourself, then you go out and you find others and bring them into the fold by the same tender, loving kindness that God and His brethren have shown to you. So if you'd like to start that journey tonight, then come forward as we stand and sing. Give me your hand, but give God your heart, all of it, and He'll bless it richly. While we stand and sing, won't you choose?